All right, everybody. Figured we'd start, a couple minutes earlier because you're gonna have so many questions for Matthew at the end here. But very excited to announce our next keynote here at the Planet MicroCap Showcase Vancouver in association with Small Cap Discoveries. I've known Matthew now for, I think, almost 10 years, follower of his original blog over at eSpaceMC, and just so stoked for him to continuing to up his game and his career to now he's portfolio manager over at Rivemont Microcap Fund. Good friend, original founding member, like I said, of the Montreal Microcap Mafia, Matthew Martin.
Thanks, Bobby, and thanks to the guys, Small Cap Discoveries, for having me today. So just a quick disclaimer to say that this presentation is for informational purposes only. Nothing here is recommendations or investment advice. So today we're gonna talk about Canadian microcap M&A. It's a topic that's been covered a little bit by Paul yesterday. So I might repeat some of the things he said yesterday, but we're gonna dive a bit deeper into the data today. So first of all, we're gonna take a look at what happened in the market in the last few years. This is the TSX Venture Index. I think it's a good proxy for the microcap space in Canada. It's not perfect. Some microcaps are listed on the CSE or the TSX, but I think this gives you a good picture of the type of market we've been in over the last 5 years. So the TSX Venture has been essentially flat for the last 5 years. It peaked in February of 2021, and since then, until the bottom in November last year, it went down 54%. So it's been a very challenging market, no momentum at all. At least we're seeing now that the market has kind of bottomed. So hopefully we can start going up from here. Two key pieces of data that I typically look at and I follow every month as the TSX Venture publishes this data monthly is the equity capital raised and the value traded. So essentially, the equity capital raise is the total amount of financings that are happening on by TSX Venture listed companies in any given month or year. So I track this data just to see what kind of financing environment are we in right now. Is it challenging for companies to raise capital? Are there more or less IPO financings, for example? And this data, year to date, 2024, it's been down 11% year over year, and it's 30% below the 15-year average. So the financing that data is very, very depressed right now in historical terms, and also it's still declining year over year. So it's getting worse, not better. The value traded is essentially the trading volume that's happening on the TSX Venture, but in dollar terms. And this is pretty much the same story, down 8% year over year and 43% below the 15-year average. So again, very depressed. So it's challenging to be a microcap company right now. Not a lot of volume, it's hard to get financing, and for investors as well, it's hard to get in and out of positions. So things are not improving yet, although I'm seeing in some pockets of the market, like Paul mentioned yesterday, I think the growing profitable companies are doing better than the aggregate data we're seeing. If we look at the US, the small caps keep underperforming compared to large caps. This is actually the last 10 years plus year to date 2024. I'm comparing the Russell 1000, which is large caps, with the Russell 2000, which is small caps. And you can see that small caps have underperformed in 10 of the last 11 years, including this year, including the last 8 years in a row. So it's been very, very tough again to be a small cap investor. Basically, there's no momentum. The market sentiment has been extremely pessimistic towards microcaps. So that's the market we're in right now. But I think there is hope, and hopefully you guys believe it too because you're here. So several microcaps have been acquired in the last 12 to 18 months. That's what we'll talk about today. This is just a sample of some names that have been acquired. That's not there are some missing in there, but it's just to give you a flavor of the types of companies that have been acquired. And I'm sure many of you guys recognize some of those names. So this is the M&A data in aggregate. I compiled all transactions that happened on the Canadian in the Canadian microcap market. I defined microcap as transactions below $1 billion in transaction value. And you can see out of those 24 transactions, the average premium was 66%, which is, you know, quite significant. It shows that the space is undervalued right now, and these buyers that are buying at these premiums, they still expect to make money off those investments over time. So it shows how much the current microcap space is undervalued. The average transaction value was $200 million, and a private equity firm was a buyer in 13 out of 24 transactions. This is a bit unusual. I don't have any data, but I'm sure if we look back like 10, 20 years, the mix of strategic versus private equity buyer was probably much more tilted toward the strategic buyers. So we've seen lately that private equity firms, especially U.S. private equity firms, have been very, very active acquiring the Canadian microcap space. If we dive a little bit deeper into a subsegment of this this data, I like to look at technology because technology is a sector that I invest a lot in. There have been 8 transactions in the technology space. 6 of them have been by private equity, and most of them have been by U.S. private equity. So we'll take a look at some of the data. The average revenue growth rate of these 8 companies was 15%, which is, you know, not super high, not like extremely high growth. And the average valuation was 5.7 times AR. So you can see the kind of valuations that these companies can get in the private market, even though they're not growing extremely quickly. And obviously, the growth rate correlates well with the revenue multiple they're getting. The higher the growth rate, the higher the multiple. The highest we've seen is almost 14 times AR for a company growing 24%. And one thing that I noticed that I thought was interesting when analyzing these deals is that a lot of them had a high proportion of revenues coming from the U.S. On average, it was 71%. So essentially, you know, these companies are based in Canada. They're traded in Canada. Their costs are in Canadian dollars. But they're selling, the majority of their revenues are in the U.S. So they're almost a U.S. company in terms of their revenue mix. And these private equity buyers, I think, are looking at these assets and saying, you know, we understand the end market and we can buy it at such a discount, especially with the foreign exchange rate as well. So I think that's why we're seeing these transactions happening. So why is this happening? We'll dive a little bit deeper into the reasons. So first of all, this is a global private equity dry powder. So the amount of money that's on the sidelines in the private equity space, it's a record high, $2.6 trillion. This is the data as of July of this year. And typically, the amount of dry powder correlates well with the amounts of deals that are happening. The more money there is on the sidelines, the more there is to deploy and get deals done. But lately, I think with interest rates rising, it's been more challenging for PE firms to access the debt market. And so it's been more challenging for them to close very large deals. And my hypothesis is that it's why we're seeing smaller deals done. And, you know, PE firms are looking everywhere to find deals, and they identify the Canadian market as a place that's ripe for doing acquisitions. This is valuation of large caps versus small caps. I think other speakers already talked about this, but, you know, we're very at generational lows, basically, in terms of valuations. This is the PE ratio of large caps versus small caps in the US. I think that's why, again, we're seeing PE firms looking at smaller opportunities because they're so discounted compared to larger companies right now. And also what's interesting about this chart, obviously, is that if we see any kind of reversion to the mean and small caps returning to better valuations than large caps over the next few years, I think it's going to be a big tailwind for us small and micro cap investors. In Canada, the previous chart I showed you was, again, U.S. data. In Canada, valuations are depressed too, but I think nobody knows about it. And the reason why this valuation discrepancy is hidden is that we have a heavy exposure to natural resources. So I think it's about two-thirds of the Canadian market that's either mining or oil and gas. And a lot of these companies, especially the junior exploration companies, are for the most part unprofitable. So if you look at the TSX Venture Index in aggregate, the index is unprofitable. And the TSX Small Cap, which includes somewhat larger companies, some producers, it's still trading at a 15.9 times PE, which looks on the surface very expensive. But if you drill down and you look at profitable growing companies, the valuations are still very, very depressed, and probably even more depressed than the U.S. But it's very hard to tell if you're an investor looking at, you know, I have a global portfolio, where should I invest? It's hard to make a case for investing in Canadian microcaps just based on a quick look at the valuations. That's changing now because M&A is happening. And what does that mean? It means capital is starting to flow into the asset class. When a company gets acquired, typically the shareholders, they get a cash inflow. They look to redeploy into similar opportunities. So what that means is, you know, the pool of opportunities is shrinking. Companies are exiting the public market. And at the same time, you have more capital that's chasing opportunities. So more capital chasing fewer deals means typically prices go up. That's why we've seen in the last, since the start of the year, basically, the high quality profitable microcaps have done extremely well. And when prices go up, creates momentum. So more people start to care about the asset class, more eyeballs, more capital inflows. I think we'll see more capital inflows, not just from private equity firms acquiring companies, but also just investors on the sidelines that will start to move some cash into the asset class, and that should provide higher returns for the next few years. So, just a few reasons to be bullish on the microcaps right now. First of all, the fundamentals are strong. I haven't seen any reason why some of these companies should trade at 50% lower than a few years ago. Most of them are still reporting strong financials. They're still growing. They're still profitable. I don't see anything wrong with most of these companies fundamentally. Second point is that M&A is now a catalyst to unlock value. If we go back, let's say 2 years ago, 2022, you find a very undervalued microcap, you buy it, and then nothing happens. Nobody cares. They publish good financial results. They publish good news. The stock doesn't move. Nothing happens. It's dead money. So it's not attractive in that kind of environment. It doesn't entice more investors to look at this asset class and invest capital here. But now that's changing because M&A is now the catalyst. A lot of transactions are happening. The undervalued assets are getting bought out. And so I think right now, if you allocate capital into undervalued microcaps, there's a good chance there will be a catalyst eventually to unlock that value. And the last point is that momentum is building. We've seen several success stories this year. The other presenters showed a lot of charts going up and to the right. Success stories like Kraken Robotics, Kit, SciCare, Vitalab, Cypher. Full disclosure, I own Kraken and Kit in my fund. And these opportunities are attracting, again, new people into the asset class and into looking at these winners and trying to find the next one. So in a sense, I think it's a great time to own microcaps. You know, the tide is starting to turn. It's not obvious yet. It's still very early days. As Harold showed, the you know, the volume is still at the bottom of the historical range, but I'm seeing some traction, and I think the next few years should be very, very good for investors here. So, you know, with that, I invite you to sign up to my personal newsletter. It's called Stocks and Stones. I share a lot of this data, these thoughts about the microcap space in Canada. If you want to get the M&A data that I shared earlier in the slides, I'm going to publish an article with all of this data and my takeaways from it in a couple of weeks. So if you sign up, you'll get that in your inbox. You can also connect with me on LinkedIn and X. And if you're if you want to learn more about the microcap fund that I manage, you can visit the website rivemont.ca. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions.
The question was, what's your favorite idea at the moment?
Favorite idea? Well, actually, you know, I'll tell you what my biggest position is right now. It's Kraken Robotics. So obviously we own it. It's been a big winner for us. We started buying the stock at 16 cents in 2018. It's now $1.75. So it's grown into being our largest position. What's happening with the company? They've been growing. They went from when we initially bought the stock, they were doing 3.5 million in revenue. This year, their guidance is they're going to do about 100 million. They went from unprofitable to healthily profitable. And the market cap went from 20 million to almost 400 million. So it's been a very big success for us. And it's still, I think, in the early stages of institutional discovery. We've seen volume increasing a lot in the last, let's call it in the last year. You know, they have big partners, big business they're bidding on. So I think the stock will keep doing well. Yes.
Why doesn't the TSX then just segregate exploration companies who were designed not to have revenues and therefore designed not to have profits? When it comes to providing statistical data of to create price earnings ratios, for example, I mean, that would solve the problem.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, if you dig, there is some data you can find. I think you guys at Small Cap Discoveries, you know, I think there was some data shared yesterday on the segmentation of financing data in mining, oil and gas, and the rest. But it's not obvious, and I don't think there's any index excluding unprofitable companies, probably because there wouldn't be that many companies in the index. So that might be the problem. But I think, you know, that's the opportunity for us. Someone who's willing to dig deeper, look below the surface, I think there are a lot of overlooked opportunities because of this disconnect. Yeah.
Great presentation, Matthew. What are your thoughts on, you know, shareholder activism and potentially increase in shareholder activism around you know, some of these M&A takeovers from private equity? It's pretty obvious these companies are being taken over for, you know, quite cheap, right?
So do you mean activism in terms of fighting for these companies to stay public? Yeah. So will we see more shareholder activism to fight these takeovers? I think it's going to be challenging because in most cases, what we've seen so far, like, management is on board with the board and management are willing to sell, and they vote in favor of the deal, you know. So sometimes you have already like 30, 40, 50% of the shares that are going to vote for the deal. And then what I heard is that any institutional investors that get a company acquired, they typically vote for the deal because that's not their business to fight, you know, against it. So all the institutional investors in the stock will typically vote for as well. They'll just go with the recommendation from the board. So I think it's pretty challenging to fight in these types of situations. And even like some of the deals we've seen, some of them I was a shareholder and I was talking to other shareholders, and you know, of course everybody's pissed about like the valuation's too low, we should ask for a higher price and all that stuff, and I'm gonna vote against. And then you see the results of the vote a couple months later, and it's like 99% of people voted for. So it's like once you get that gain, like the stock immediately re-rates 50, 60, 70%. It's really hard to turn that down and try to vote against the deal, because then you have all the ARP funds will sell into the market, your stock will get back down even maybe lower than it was before the acquisition announcement. So it's, you know, it's very challenging, but I think what we need is just investors realize how undervalued the space is and then buy these stocks in the market, and the prices go up and we see, you know, all the good stuff I showed in the slides, the momentum keeps going, and then the valuations get to a point where these companies can stay public at reasonable valuations, and you don't have these all these takeovers from PE firms. Any other questions? All right. Well, enjoy your day, everyone.